There are around 20,000 babies born in Australia and New Zealand each year who are conceived through assisted reproductive technology. My next guest, like many other Australian women, underwent in vitro fertilisation, or IVF, but her path to parenthood has been anything but smooth. After freezing her eggs several years ago, she learned she was unable to use them in her home state. She says she was forced to become a reproductive refugee, cross the country to access medical care that she needed to become a mum. And it's an experience she says was profoundly traumatic. And she's sharing her story to highlight what she says is every woman's right to access IVF, regardless of the circumstances. The guest has chosen to remain anonymous, so we'll call her Jane. Jane, welcome to Life Matters. Can you tell me the story of how you came to become pregnant? Because it's a pretty unorthodox one. Your story started when you decided to freeze your eggs 4 years ago. What went into that decision?
So I am a professional woman in my 30s. So at the time, I was still unsure whether I did want to have children or not. But to give my future self a little bit of choice, I decided to freeze my eggs.
And do you mind telling me what that process was like? What's involved in that?
Sure. So it was a lot more involved than I anticipated. It's actually most of the stages of IVF. So you have to inject yourself with lots of different hormones. You undergo so many blood tests to track your cycle that you feel like a human pincushion. And you have so many intravaginal ultrasounds that you're probed to within an inch of your life. And then the procedure itself, this is not the case for all women, but for me, it was incredibly painful. So I experienced a lot of post-operative pain after the eggs were collected. And I also experienced some side effects from the overstimulation. So all the hormones you take to stimulate your ovaries to produce more eggs than normal.
So you've made that decision, you've gone through that process, you've paid for that service, and then you went back to the clinic last year because you were like, yes, I do want to have a baby as a solo mum using donor sperm. What happened then?
So I was assuming at that point that they'd frozen my eggs and that if I went back to that clinic, I could use those eggs to undergo IVF. But to my shock and surprise, the fertility specialist told me that under WA legislation, I was not eligible to access my own eggs and use them for the final stages of IVF. And that's because I was not classified as, in inverted commas, subfertile. So I had elected to become a solo mum by choice. So it wasn't due to a reproductive health problem that I wanted to undergo IVF. But I thought, as I was by that stage in my late 30s, that my reproduction capacity will have decreased due to age and I would be able to access IVF. But that was not the case. I also have another health condition which I thought may reduce my fertility and make me eligible. But again, I was not considered subfertile enough under the legislation and was unable to access the treatment in my home state.
What options were given to you at that time?
So the only option within WA that was offered to me was to undergo several rounds of intrauterine insemination. So that still involves all those hormone injections, the cycle tracking, and the ultrasounds. So it would still cost thousands of dollars per round, but it has a very low success rate. So at the age I was at that time, the success rate was probably estimated to be 10 to 15% per round versus an estimated success rate for IVF of around 40%. So in other words, they were trying to force me to undergo several rounds of treatment, which they knew was not going to be very successful, and deny me access to IVF, which they knew might be more successful. So I considered that option and I thought that's really not ideal to me and not exactly ethical, because they were blocking access to my own eggs, they were withholding access to treatment which they knew was more effective, and most importantly, it was just denying me basic bodily autonomy and reproductive freedom. So I had to go for the only other option available to me, which was to seek treatment interstate.
So you did find a doctor in another state who was willing to help you?
So that in itself was a challenge, Tegan, because the clinic in WA indicated to me that they would only transfer my eggs to another fertility clinic interstate that was part of the same chain of clinics. So firstly, I was limited in my choice there, but I was lucky enough that a fertility specialist in another state for the same clinic, the same chain of clinics, was willing to help me. They said my case was too legally sensitive for them to take it, so they referred me to their clinical director, who was one of the most senior fertility specialists in that state, if not Australia. And fortunately, that specialist was willing to take the professional risk to assist me to bypass the WA laws. I was told by the clinic here to keep it very quiet because they couldn't be seen to be aiding and abetting someone to bypass the laws. And if it was on any of my records, they might block the transfer of my eggs. That was really harrowing. But somehow this interstate specialist just was able to negotiate with the director of the clinic here to basically hostage release my eggs so that I could undergo IVF interstate.
You're listening to Life Matters on Radio National. I'm Tegan Taylor, and I'm talking to a woman we're calling Jane, who says she was blocked from using her own frozen eggs in her home state to undergo IVF to become a solo mum by choice. One person says what's involved in IVF and freezing eggs is lots and lots of dollars, no doubt at all. Peter says, why on earth wasn't she told this before her eggs were frozen? Appalling. Jane, did you know that this might be a hurdle that you'd have to overcome?
So they did mention that the WA legislation made IVF available only to people considered subfertile. But to me, it's a question of what do you consider subfertile, firstly. Obviously, our fertility as women declines as we age. And secondly, it's a matter of freedom of access to healthcare. So all women, regardless of their circumstances, should be free to access IVF. And so I assumed that by the time it came to the point where I would want to access my eggs, that we would have that freedom.
Jane, I'd love you to just hang on for a moment, but I want to bring Stephen Page, who's the director, of Page Proven Family and Infertility. Page Proven Family and Fertility Lawyers into the conversation. Stephen, thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks, Tegan.
So this is something that you're looking at across Australia all the time as part of your work. Why was Jane told she couldn't use her frozen eggs in WA?
Because WA law says for a single woman to access her eggs, the doctor has to assess that she is unable to conceive a child due to medical reasons. And the Western Australian legislation is quite clear that if you act outside your licensing conditions, then you can lose your the clinic can lose its WA license, the clinician can commit an offence. So doctors met with that clear legislative overview, act conservatively. Now, no other state has this problem. It's just WA.
Why is it different in other states?
Well, every state has its own laws concerning IVF. Somehow, as a nation of 27 million people, we have eight systems. And the Fertility Society, by way of disclosure, I'm secretary of the Fertility Society as well, but we've called for national uniform laws regarding IVF. So hopefully this problem can't continue. And this came about, ironically, this came about, this restriction 20 years ago to allow single women to access IVF, and it was part of a gay and lesbian law reform at the time. So what was enabling and fit for purpose in 2002 is now restrictive and archaic. Back in 2002, no one was thinking about egg freezing. It was just it just wasn't part of the conversation, and now, of course, it's common. And as Jane has said, we should all be entitled to bodily autonomy and reproductive freedom.
So the legalities involved in Jane moving her frozen eggs interstate, we heard her say that the clinics were skittish about it, not sure whether they would be breaking the law by doing that. what do we know about the law here?
Well, number one, Jane's the owner. Number two, there's no, under the Constitution, you have freedom of interstate trade, commerce and intercourse. And number three, in Western Australia, there are restrictions about moving donor eggs, donor sperm and donor embryos. You need permission of the Reproductive Technology Council. These eggs, her eggs, were not donor eggs, so she had full freedom to move them.
So other than going interstate to access IVF, which is what Jane has done, are there other options? Could she have challenged the law in her home state?
Not on the face of it. It's a valid law in Western Australia. Western Australia has talked for some time now about replacing this law and the Surrogacy Act in Western Australia. The government said prior to the election that it was going to bring in a bill to replace both. We haven't seen that bill yet. Hopefully that happens soon.
So there is change perhaps on the horizon. Is there a concerted push to change this?
Certainly on the part of the Fertility Society, there's a push to change it. We've got Greg Hunt and Rachel Swift to carry out a wide-based community consultation. The Federal Health Minister has said that regulation of IVF should be part of the national conversation now, so hopefully that will happen soon.
And we did reach out to WA Health for a comment on this, and they haven't yet responded to our request for comment. Jane, I'd love to come back to you. You've had so much going on. Why was it important for you to share this story?
So firstly, it's to urge the WA government to really make updating these laws a priority. People can't afford to wait months or years. That could be the difference between them becoming parents or not. And also, and I'm going to try not to get too emotional when I say this, but I found out that I am having a daughter. And so it really is important to me that she grows up and she has bodily autonomy and reproductive freedom, because these laws can't persist. And women need to have choice over their own bodies. The only person who should have a say over if you can try to have children or if you don't want children is you.
Jane, oh my gosh, thank you so much for sharing that. It's very, very moving to hear you speak about that, speak about your little girl in that way. What changes would you like to see happen between now and the time that your daughter might be looking to have kids?
So in the specific instance of access to assisted reproduction, it should be open to solo parents by choice, gay singles and couples, widows, women who have survived domestic violence, who still want to have kids but outside a partnership. All these people may not have reproductive health problems or be considered subfertile, but they still deserve access to healthcare, to reproductive healthcare.
Thank you so much, Jane. You were forced to become a reproductive refugee. She left her home state to access IVF and fulfil her dream of becoming a mum in her late 30s. And you also heard from Stephen Page, a family and fertility lawyer.
ABCRN helps you understand the world. Find more of our stories on the ABC Listen app.